This episode of Keeping It Real is brought to you by Quicken Loans. Real estate professionals, when you work with Quicken Loans, you have an agent relationship manager available to you and your team. These dedicated experts are part of the agent relations team. They serve as your single point of coordination, so you can count on them to keep you in the loop throughout your client's entire home buying process. Call 888-980-2891 or go to realestate.quickenloans.com today. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. And now, on to the show. Welcome to another episode of Keeping It Real, the largest podcast in the country made for real estate brokers by real estate brokers. My name is DJ Paris. I am your host and guide through the show. And today we have our Investor Insight monthly episode with Bree Schmidt. Now, if you're not familiar with Bree, let me tell you a little bit about her. Bree Schmidt acquired her first investment property in 2011 and left the corporate world in 2014 when she became a full-time real estate investor. She's the managing broker of Second City Real Estate, a full-service brokerage working with new investors and seasoned investors looking to expand their knowledge of the industry and their portfolio. Bree utilizes her extensive knowledge of building and managing a portfolio to teach clients all about all aspects of buy and hold investing. Bree teaches how to analyze potential properties, calculating your ROI, best practices when marketing and leasing, and also how to be a landlord and build a portfolio. Her job does not end when you close on a property. She is always available to help you throughout the process and scale your business. She is the co-founder of the Midwest Real Estate Networking Summit, which is a nonprofit educational summit for real estate investors. It's a three-day annual event, provides new to experience investors with the tools and connections necessary to build a real estate business. And they just announced their 2020 next dates. And so if you're interested, and you should, if you're at all interested in real estate investing or working with investors, go and attend the Midwest Real Estate Summit. To get more information, visit MidwestReSummit.com. Welcome, Bree, to welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
It's been a few months. We should actually, you just had a major life event. Would you care to share that with the audience? What's happened?
Yeah. So when we last did the show, I was pregnant and now I have a baby. She'll be 2 months tomorrow. So it's been a fun few months getting adjusted to not sleeping ever.
Well, congratulations on behalf of all the listeners, as well as myself. We are thrilled to have you back, but we understand that time is more limited or in short supply these days.
It's just a different adjustment.
I haven't been through it yet, and I've heard that it all gets easier after year three. So you only have 2 years and 10 months left before it gets easier.
Oh, I heard that's the worst year.
Well, like I said, I've never done it, so what do I know? My sister's, hers is in almost approaching year three, so I'll report back after she hits year three. So what do we want to talk about today?
So one of the things I wanted to talk about, and it's kind of relevant to me at least right now, is time management with investors and how I deal with them, since that's the 99% of my business. And one of the things, I actually just got an email the other day from an investor who was looking, they're from Israel, and he's looking to pool money from out of the country, bring it to the U.S. He wants to go do it in Chicago, build a team out here, build a portfolio. And, through multiple conversations with him, we decided that it just wasn't, we were going to pass him off to someone else who, A, was probably a better fit in the first place, but B, because you can't always just take on every single piece of business that comes your way. What they're looking to do is extremely time intensive. And at the end of the day, not worth our time to do that sort of work. So that's kind of what sparked this idea is, if you are working with investors or you want to work with investors, how can you manage your time with them to be more efficient?
And this is a common question. I even know here at our firm, I'm sure you get probably these calls all the time because you're so well known in the investment space. We get them here at our firm as well, where somebody will just call up randomly, seemingly randomly, and say, hey, I'm an investor. I'm looking for some deals. Can you patch me through to one of your brokers? Which of course we do, but we're always like telling that broker, hey, here's how... And we don't have a great set of guidelines to help a broker, especially a newer broker who's like, I'll take any lead you have. And it might be an investor who ends up taking maybe more time than it's worth. So how do you go about evaluating who you work with and what kind of time you spend?
So that's a great question. I'm sure you guys get it a ton too. And how, you know, everyone wants to be an investor, and you, especially now in the cycle, the market cycle, where when we're at the top of the market, everyone's jumping into this business, it seems. Just like we see an influx of people becoming real estate agents, we also see an influx of people becoming real estate investors. So one of the first things I do, understand that I manage a team of six. And the way that we are structured internally is we all work in areas that we personally invest. So the first thing I ask them is, you know, what's your budget and what area are you looking? To make sure that either A, am I the right person, or is it better off to go to one of my team members who's, you know, handles that area? We've got someone that handles, you know, Berwyn, Cicero, Forest Park. We have someone that handles the south side, north side, suburbs. We have it all structured based on our own area of expertise internally. Once they've kind of gone through there, the second question I ask is, what's your budget? And that's a really important question. And if they don't answer that question, I don't move forward with the conversation. I want to know exactly what's your budget, like, and how are you paying for this? Have you been pre-approved, right? I want to see your pre-approval. I want to see your proof of funds, because I find a lot of times people are like, oh yeah, you know, my budget's $800,000. Like, great. Let me see your pre-approval. And then I get the pre-approval and it's $400,000. I'm like, well, how are you going to buy $800,000 property if you're approved for $400,000? And their response is always, well, rental income. Because you can use rental income to increase your qualification. And I had said, you know, no rental income in a Chicago property will ever increase your approval by that much. Generally speaking, you need about $1,700 of rent to increase your approval by $100,000. And financially with DTI calculations and all that. So that's step A. And I said, I used to be afraid to ask them off the bat what their approval was. And ask them, like, you know, hey, have you been pre-approved? Let me see your qualifications before even taking a phone call. But I find that it helps me weed out half the people up front who just like, well, I'm sure I'll be fine. You know, great. If you're sure you'll be fine, then go talk to the bank and then come back and let me know. And a lot of times I think people don't understand the core competencies of approvals, which is debt to income ratio. And if they don't understand debt to income ratio, they don't. They just think like, oh, I've got a good job and I've got good credit. Well, what they don't realize is they've got a bunch of debts. They currently have a mortgage. It eats up 50% of their DTI. There's no way they're actually getting an approval anywhere close to what they need to afford. But secondly, I also ask to make sure they understand realistic expectations. You know, I said at least once a week, someone messages me and says, you know, my budget's $650 and I want to be in Bucktown.
Right.
And I respond and say, that's just not possible.
Yeah, you can buy a condo for $650. That's about it.
Yeah. You know, and that's always my response. Like, that's not realistic. Are you open to other areas? You know, and if they're like, well, I really want to be in Bucktown. I'm like, well, then I can't help. Like, that I physically cannot help you. That is just not realistic. Lincoln Park's obviously same thing too. But, you know, if you're looking for a cash flowing investment at $650, you're more Avondale, Irving Park, Albany Park sort of areas. You're definitely not in the Bucktown Wicker Park areas at $650, unless your rehab budget is about $400,000, which typically it's not.
So how often do you get calls? Because I know we get calls like this where somebody says, when we ask those questions to qualify before we pass them off to one of our brokers, and they'll go, hey, I'm just looking for deals, right? So that's a very common response. What do you say to that?
So it definitely goes back again to what, if they're in my specific area, so I cover the north side of Chicago, I was explaining to them that the average deal is typically 98% of list price. And a vast majority of my clients are involved in multiple offers over asking price. So if you're looking for something that's pennies on the dollar, then Chicago market is just not for you. That's my exact explanation. The north side of Chicago is not for you if you're looking to get something that's 70 cents on the dollar.
Or if somebody says, hey, I'm looking for a short sale. You probably get that question a lot too.
Not really. And I try to explain to people that you can't, you know, going into this as an investor, the more like pigeonholed you are with like, it has to be this neighborhood, or it has to be a you know, brick gray stone, or it has to be two bath, like the more like two bathrooms, whatever it is, the more focused you are in those capacities in the beginning, the harder it is to find your investment. So I always try to explain to people, you know, you should go into this with an open mind. And I always explain to people that it's similar to having a pie, right? And you have a pie, you can cut your pie into four pieces. And the four pieces are cash flow, condition, location, and price. So if you want cash flow to be the biggest piece of your pie, the other pieces have to be smaller. That's just, you know, how it works. There's only so much pie you can have. Same thing like with location. If location is the biggest piece of your pie, the other pieces need to be smaller. You're going to sacrifice on price. It's going to be expensive. You're going to sacrifice on cash flow. And then you're going to sacrifice on condition because location is the biggest priority to you. So going into it, it's up to you to figure out, you know, hey, what's the most important part of this? Is it going to be, you know, I definitely want an X amount of cap rate / return, or I definitely want a project that's value add, or I want a project that I don't have to do anything to because I work full time and I want something turnkey. These are all variables that go into the puzzle, which you don't necessarily need to know off the top, you know, off the front base of it all, but it's something that you need to know before you make the purchase. So short sales fall into that. But I also, as every, you know, any agent knows, short sales are not what they used to be. They're, you know, they have not been for a very long time, you know, these smoking hot deals where you're, again, getting things pennies on the dollar. It's just not realistic. And this market cycle, A, it's not realistic. And then in the areas of Chicago that I deal with, it's just not realistic. We haven't seen, you know, hugely discounted properties in at least 5 years.
So once somebody passes the sniff test, we'll call it, as an investor, and you say, okay, they understand their budget, they understand approximately what they're looking for, they seem serious, I've seen the documentation, then how do you go about determining how much time to spend with them?
So one of the things that we do, especially before we even do a phone call, and I always say phone call because I don't do in-person meetings. I think in-person meetings are a huge waste of time. I will meet them at the actual showings when it's time. But anything as far as conversation about, you know, what to expect, all those things can be done over the phone. And
well, and plus there's just real quickly, sorry to interrupt, but there's also safety considerations, in particular if this is not a referral or someone you know.
Correct. Of course. So that's one of my rules is I only do phone calls until we actually go to do showings. But before that phone call, what I do is I send them an email and I actually have it uploaded in BiggerPockets as well as a document. Every year I go through all my clients sold investment properties. And every year I pick out five properties that I think are average. And I think that are a good representation of what you can get, you know, in a short period of time in Chicago. So I don't want to show them the home runs. And I want to show them different price points, different neighborhoods. And I put all my calculations as far as returns, what the cash on cash is going to be, what the cap rate is going to be, what the investment down payment is going to be. I put all of that into an Excel sheet and I tab it out by loan product as well. So I send them a document. I usually send them the last 2 years of examples. And I like to explain to them that, hey, these are property examples, which are a good representation of what you can expect in this market. Review this first before we schedule a call. So they're able to go back and see 10 properties that clients have acquired, that my clients have acquired, and what the actual returns are for different loan programs. So if they're thinking, I'm going to do FHA or I'm going to do 25% down, this is what the actual numbers look like. And I find specifically with out-of-state investors, that conversation almost always stops right there because they're always looking, you know, from out of state, they're looking for at least 8-9% cap rates, if not 10s. 10's always the number that I hear. Like, I want a 10% cap rate. And I'm like, I want a unicorn. That'd be great. You know, Chicago is more like a 6, potentially a 7 realistically, but it's more, you know, it's a 5 to 7% range. It's definitely not a 10% range. So I asked them to go through and write notes back to me, and then we can discuss those notes on the phone call. That gives them the opportunity to do their own due diligence and sort of creating their own opinion of things. They're looking at pictures. They're looking at room sizes. They're looking at rents. Again, what the returns are. And then coming back to me, and I'm like, so which one of those is your favorite? Is usually my first question. You know, because I want to see which one they picked, A, just to determine their personality, but B, which one they picked to make sure that they actually did the work. Because if they're not going to do the work, I'm not going to do the work either. And that leads the conversation. You know, which one was your least favorite? What did you think about the areas? What did you think about the returns, the condition? And that guides the conversation, which usually leads to a pretty in-depth hour-long conversation about expectations in this market. You know, not just from a return perspective, but like, hey, you know, is this something that you want to live in? You know, do you have to be near transportation? Like, let's talk about this. What's your future plans? Are you going to live there for a year? Are you planning on living there for 5 years? You know, what's the deal? And that's kind of our jumping off point of starting that conversation with all potential clients.
Yeah, that makes sense. How much time do you spend sourcing inventory for the investor to review? Is that the bulk of the time that you spend or not?
So that's also something as far as time management to discuss. So once we've understood that they can A, afford the areas that we are working in, B, that they understand what kind of returns are to be expected. And we tend to be very conservative with our projections just to, you know, I don't want to sell sunshine and rainbows. Then it comes to, you know, now we can start looking at properties, right? And so again, my team is all focused by area. So I definitely do this for myself on the north side with my partner, Charlie, and my other agents are getting better at doing this. But how we work things is because we cover essentially from Pilsen to Jefferson Park up to Evanston is basically our main focus area. So every day we get every single MLS listing 3 times a day of every single multi-unit in that area. Charlie and I both independently go through and analyze every single MLS property that covers our area. And we're analyzing it in what we call, it's like a preliminary projection, right? We haven't seen the property, so we're just guessing. We're guessing on rents, right? We're using what the agent lists the rents are. We're using a site called Rentometer, and then we're using our market knowledge. I mean, I've looked at every single MLS listing on the north side of Chicago in the last 8 years. Every single one of them. So most of the numbers are in my head just based on experience. And what Charlie and I each do independently is every single day we go through the list and we put it into a calculator for us. And once we've got good properties in the list that we think clients will like, we send it out to our entire client database.
And this is really important. This is a huge distinction from what brokers who are maybe new to working with investors or wanting to invest themselves may think is, especially if you're wanting to work with investors, you might think, well, how do I find investors? When Bree will tell you, that's actually not the hardest part. The hardest part is finding the deal to send to them, which makes sense. So that's why she's analyzing. She knows the investors will show up once she can bring them something that makes sense.
Absolutely. You know, there's definitely been times where we've had a client pass on a deal that we thought was a great deal. And 9 times out of 10, we're able to sight unseen, have another client write an offer on it. But just because based on our level of experience and our ability to analyze properties so well, if it's good, we're selling it. You know, that's how we see it. Like, but that's one of the differences. So when clients come to me, one of the things that we discuss on our, what we call our onboarding call, and I explain to them, you know, like, hey, should I be getting a daily alert from the MLS? I'm like, honestly, I don't set anyone up for a daily alert on the MLS. I think it's a waste of time. There's no context.
Right. They can't do the math that you can do.
Correct. I can do it a lot quicker, a lot faster. But especially if you're a newer to intermediate investor, you know, you might not know that the rents in this school district, which is right across the street from another, you know, are different than this school district across the street. There's so many things, and it's so intricate that if you are, or if you're just going to use a site like Rentometer, Rentometer is a great website, but it's the problem with it is it's not super accurate. That's the issue, because it's that if you, it only goes by bedrooms, bathrooms. So if you put, you know, I'm looking for a rent comp, and it prints out a really pretty report and all this data, and it's great. But if you're putting a two-bedroom in Lincoln Park, right, it's not differentiating the difference between a two-bedroom in a high-rise luxury condo and a vintage two-bedroom by DePaul, you know, that hasn't been updated since the 80s. It's, there's no distinction between those two. And those two are going to have, even though they're both two-bedrooms, there's no, you know, they don't take in consideration square foot, condition, all those things. So it's a, it's part of the tools that we use, but it can't be the primary tool. And I find that a lot of investors will use that as their, or like Zillow, you know, well, Zillow Rentimate says that it's supposed to be this, you know, and that's not necessarily accurate. And then it will throw off your numbers, and it may or may not be a good investment. So we like to take that off of the hands of our investors, especially in the beginning. But we also encourage them, like, hey, I would set up your own alerts if you want. And when you see something you like, send it over to us. And in the beginning, you're going to send it over to us with just a link, you know, hey, what about this property? And then I'm going to come back with my notes and my calculations for you. But then as we start growing in our process, I want you as the investor to start putting together the preliminary analysis and sending it over to me. Because what I'm doing is I'm teaching you. At the end of the day, I'm teaching you. Right. I don't want you to take my word and say, hey, this is what I should do. This is what I, you know, this is what Bree thinks is right. So I should buy it. That's not, you know, it's not realistic. I want you to know that it's right, that it's the right investment for you. So my goal is to teach you all these things throughout this process so that when the time comes, you're ready to make the decision for yourself. That also helps us speed up for the second time around too. Most clients, it's the first time we might look at 50 properties. The second time, it's always less than three. I don't know why. And it's the weirdest thing, but they'll, you know, they're ready for the next one, but because they've learned it all in the upfront, you know, they don't need to go see 50 properties to know what they want and to know what a good return is at that point. You know, they just need to see a couple, and they're now they don't want to go on as many showings because they're they're looking at the preliminary numbers up front, and they're able to look at, you know, oh, you know, I know this location. I don't like it. I've been there before. Or I don't like frame houses on a slab, whatever it may be, you know, or I really can't duplex up that attic, whatever it is. They're getting more fine tuned with their expectations. So they don't want to go see as many properties anymore. They only want to go see the ones that they really think will be a good fit for them.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so for the brokers who are listening, who are thinking, well, how do I get this information? How do I learn how to analyze properties? Really, this is a great opportunity to promote the Midwest Real Estate Summit, because this is exactly what you learn in this summit. I was fortunate enough to get to go for a little bit to the last one, and it was amazing. And the speakers you have are amazing. And she brings speakers from all over the country, maybe even all over the world, really. And people come in from all over to attend this. So please, guys, if you're interested and you really, because it's a really good point back to the idea of putting somebody on an MLS search, you really don't want to do that, right? Because then you're going to get a million emails and questions and phone calls going, what about this property? What about this property? Whereas you want to tell them, hey, three times a day, I'm looking at multi-units or whatever your process is. And here's the general process I use to figure out if this is a good opportunity. And, you know, but if you don't know how to do that, the Midwest Real Estate Summit's probably the best place that I've ever been exposed to teach a broker or an investor how to actually start analyzing properties.
Absolutely. So, and there's, you know, literally hundreds of investors that will be there. And it's a very network-centric event, meaning we do a lot with promoting networking. As I said, most investors are very like laid back type people where if you ask them like, you know, hey, what criteria are you looking for? Any experienced investor will tell you in 5 seconds. I've got three things I look for, A, B, and C, you know? And then again, if you ask them too, how are you determining those numbers? Almost all of them, everyone does things a little bit differently. But I've always experienced when I was first starting out, you know, and I'd ask people, they would grab a napkin and start telling me how they run their numbers and why, you know, and it's a great event. Yes. For learning all those things. And for networking with other investors and getting involved with the community.
Yeah. Great. So everyone who is listening, go visit MidwestReSummit.com. Right now they're updating the site for the 2020 dates. Those aren't there yet, but if you scroll to the bottom, there's a email form, put your information in, because Bree actually sent out an email recently in the last few weeks announcing the new dates. Do you have the new dates in front of you, Bree? I actually don't have them in front of me.
It's May 16th and 17th, 2020.
Yeah. It's going to be held in the same location.
Yes, it's at UIC, the UIC campus, downtown Chicago.
And it is a neat space. It's a big space. There's hundreds of people that attend. There's vendors you can talk to. And of course, the speakers and the networking opportunities are really unbelievable. And you absolutely need to go. So go again to MidwestReSummit.com. We'll also post a link in the show notes. And any other final advice for not letting investors eat up more of your time than is appropriate?
The only other piece of advice I have is, you know, one of the things I'm really big on personally is set business hours. And I, you know, my hours are from 9 to 7 Monday through Friday. I work 10 to 2 on Saturdays. I do not work on Sundays. And I've had to fire investor clients because they just weren't respectful of my time. So it's one of the things that's a big indicator to me is, if you know, most investors want to invest to be what we consider a lifestyle investing. You know, they want to have the financial freedom to be able to do what they want. And so if they can't respect my personal time, then they aren't people that I want to work with. And I have found, it took me years to do it, to fire my first client. But I think I've told this story before. The day that I fired my first client, like, I swear the clouds parted. And the sun just shone down on me. And it was such a glorious day because he was always, you know, texting me at 10 o'clock at night. And then if I wasn't responding at 10 o'clock at night, he'd call me. And, you know, that to me is just a huge sign of a time waster. If they can't respect my boundaries that I lay out for them, then they aren't someone that I'm going to want to work to. And they're just going to drain my time. Also, look at your client base. It's one of the things that I reflect on. If I notice that one client is taking up a vast majority of my time and we're not under contract or we're just seeing properties every single weekend, 10 times a week sort of thing. I quickly determine if it's going to be worth my time to continue with them or not. And if it's not, or if they're taking up too much of my time, I just tell them, I think they need to work with someone else.
And you get to do these things really when you start having the knowledge that other people don't have, right? So you always, of course, want to be smarter than your investors, not smarter, but more experienced. You want to have your systems in place because, you know, I talked to a broker once who charges 7% as their listing commission, which is higher than the average. You know, the average is probably, I don't know what, 5%, maybe 6%, but she charges an additional percent. And I said, geez, how do you sell that to your sellers? And she looked at me like, how do I not sell that? Of course she had so much value that she was bringing. She said, this is what I offer. This is why it costs the way it does. And by the way, she was a top 1% producer. So she's able to say, here's why my clients choose me and here's why they're willing to pay a premium. Now, we're not exactly saying that exact message here, but if you have this sort of information and you're actually over time develop this expertise, you have a stronger ability to be able to set these boundaries around your work and say, here's what I do. I won't work with you until X, Y, or Z. And here's the time I can give to you. And usually it works out great. But if you don't yet have all of the expertise, this is where you join bigger pockets and you start, you know, participating and listening to their podcasts and asking questions on the forum and reading. Bree is very prolific on bigger pockets and is on a lot of podcasts and is also very active in that community. And then she also started Midwest Real Estate Summit, another great place to learn. But it all starts with you becoming the knowledge source.
Well, yeah, but on that point too as well, I mean, I think that the time-sucking clients, and we all, if I say those words, we all have at least one in mind. Like, oh my God, that client was just nonstop, you know, and if it was one of the most glorious things when I started firing them. And it wasn't just because of my, like, I was experienced and I, you know, experienced as an investor. That relates to anyone. If you know, there's the 80-20 rule, right? What is that 80-20 rule? 80% of your business comes from 20% of your clients. You know, if you're finding that you are running around ragged on a specific client, you know, and is it really worth your time? Is it affecting your other clients? That's a big question too. You know, if one client is taking up half of your time, which makes you not able to service your other clients, is that client really worth it? In my opinion, the answer is no. And that's just straight up a business decision, regardless of if you work with investors or not. We even have one, like I said, and so we review our clients as well. If someone is starting to, you know, seem like a tire kicker, we will then re-engage a conversation with them about expectations, especially if we've had to tell them multiple times the same thing. You know, we have that a lot with investors, especially when it comes to rehabs. You know, they'll go into a property and be like, oh, this is like a $20,000 cosmetic job. I'm like, this is a $200,000 project. No, like, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And we're not seeing eye to eye. And they want to do an FHA loan with, you know, 3.5% down, and they don't have any money to rehab. Then why are they looking at a $200,000 rehab project? And if they keep sending us those, and we keep explaining that this is out of their budget, how are they going to pay for this? And they keep doing it, then we just let that client go.
Yeah, I mean, this is the same that non-investor brokers have with sellers who price their home too high and say, do your magic, get it sold. And the broker is desperate for the deal or wants to try and isn't able to because the price isn't reasonable. And then the seller blames them and they lose the client anyway. And they've just now wasted a tremendous amount of time. So the ability to say no, you know, in a respectful way is definitely a huge power, a huge amount of power to reclaim for yourself.
Yes. And that's what you just said is definitely one of our personal struggles of when we go up against other brokerages for listing agreements, because we don't sell sunshine and rainbows. We will tell them what we think is absolutely, like, we'll tell you, this is what we think is realistic. This is what we give them, three ranges. If you want to sell it tomorrow, here's what you list it at. If you want to sell it, if what we think it will do within, you know, 30 to 60 days in the market, and then what we think will be high, we'll sit for a few months, you know, but that's what we think is on the high end. And we've lost plenty of listings to agents that will, you know, sell them the pipe dream of what their property is worth. And then, you know, we watch them and, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months go by and then the price drops come and then they end up selling for around what or less than what we projected they'd sell for in the first place. And it gets very frustrating. But just ethically, like, I just can't go in there and be like, I think your property is worth, you know, 110% of what it's worth just to get the listing. And plus, you're right, it's a waste of time. But it's a struggle when other agents do that. And then, you know, you're stuck having to think, you know, lie to them, essentially, in my opinion.
Sure.
Or be unrealistic. We'll say that's a nice word, a nicer word.
Yeah. So hopefully this has been really helpful to our listeners. And, you know, these are the kind of topics that we want to cover, right? So with respect to investors investing, there's so much to go over that is not really taught in a traditional real estate firm, right? So the vast majority of our listeners do not work for investor-focused firms. So this is why Bree is so helpful and useful, and our listeners love it. So we want and need your questions, right? So Bree and I will definitely sift through the feedback we're getting and bring these up in future episodes. So everyone who's listening, whatever you would like to hear from Bree about investments, investors, definitely send us messages. You can contact us directly through our website, and you also stream every episode we've ever done, including all the episodes with Bree, at keepingitrealpod.com. You can also, and please follow us on Facebook. This is where we post daily content to help brokers with their business. In addition to, of course, all of our episodes, every single day there's a, we scour the internet looking for one good article to post to say this will help you. So that's facebook.com/keepingitrealpod, or just search for Keeping It Real Podcast. And of course, find us on iTunes, Google Play, any podcast app or directory you use. You should be, we're on Spotify, we're everywhere. So just do a search for Keeping It Real Podcast, subscribe, and lastly, tell a friend, right? Investors need to hear what Bree is talking about, as well as other brokers in your office. So anyone that you think would be interested in this kind of information, you know, we have spent exactly $0 promoting this podcast. We now have thousands of listeners, and it's really because of two things. One, people like Bree who come on even after just giving birth and sharing her knowledge, and also, of course, our listeners sharing this with a friend. So please continue to tell a friend. We will see. Bree, thank you again for coming on so quickly. Bree barely got any sleep last night. So this is a big, we're so honored that, and she probably, hopefully will go right back to sleep after doing this. But we're so honored that she comes on. This is a big deal for us. We're so grateful. And also thank you to all the listeners for continuing to listen. Bree, everyone go visit MidwestREsummit.com, sign up for their mailing list, and we'll be promoting this as well on our Facebook page. So Bree, thanks again.
Thanks for having me.